House State Affairs Committee meeting to order. Today is Monday, April 29th, 1991. Time is 8:47. We have a quorum present with Representatives Moyer, Choquette, Bruckman, Baker, and Cabina. Today's meeting will be taking up confirmation hearings for Richard Burton, Commissioner Designate for the Department of Public Safety. And we may get to some other bills on the agenda if we don't take 2.5 days on the commissioner. Commissioner Burton, would you join us at the table, please? Good morning.
Good morning.
What we'd like to do is just give you an opportunity to make any statement you'd like. Maybe think about where you'll be taking us, leading the department under your tenure, or your second time, I might add, as Commissioner of Public Safety, and kind of changes you see ahead for us, and anything that you might like to say about your confirmation process, and we'll open it up to questions.
Okay, thank you. Well, I guess I'll do what I know best, and I've been through this process before several years ago. I have a rare opportunity, which doesn't happen to too many people, and that's a chance to...
Excuse me.
That's a chance to be acquainted with Representative Choquette, but...
That is, all right. That is a rare opportunity.
Are you all right?
No. Yeah, I'm fine, thanks.
I mean, my first aid card's a little old, but I...
Where I got first aid needed, you don't have any help for it. Sorry.
His wife's been out of town, Commissioner, forgive him.
Oh, she's been in town.
Oh.
That's not relevant.
Well, anyway, to try to get back to the serious side again, I look forward to this opportunity, having had this job once before, and most people, boy, if I could only know what I know now back then, and here's sort of the opportunity to do that, and come back and look at a second chance to do things that I maybe wish I would have done before. But I guess the biggest advantage I have is being able to put things in perspective, having been gone on a sort of extended sabbatical, which I think is probably not a bad idea for most people in most professions. And having been on a sabbatical, although I was out, I still stayed pretty close contact and was pretty much an observer and aware of what was going on, because this is all I've done all my life, so it's kind of hard to completely cut yourself off from it. It's sort of like, I guess, they say about Marine Corps, you know, once a Marine, always a Marine, whether you're there or not. So I guess once a trooper, always a trooper. That's about my attitude. But the biggest thing that I've observed, and we've discussed that at this table, is the opportunity for me to come back and looking at what's happened to the Department of Public Safety in the ensuing 12 years while I was gone, during a time of a lot of fiscal growth and a pretty good-sized increase in the population of the state of Alaska, and a tremendous increase in growth in the rest of state government. Well, at the same time, public safety, which I consider, and I'm sure you do, is one of the things that government probably should be doing in the first place. Amongst all the things that they do, that some of the things I think they should maybe not be in, but public safety certainly doesn't fall in that category. Public safety suffered a lot in the last 12 years, and they were not allowed to keep up personnel-wise with the increased demands on the department caused by the increase in population, the increase in vehicles that have come to the state, the effects of traffic enforcement, the numerous new fisheries that have evolved over the last 12 years. It's become a whole new thing, which affects the department's division of fish and wildlife. We're behind the curve some 8 or 10 years in a lot of these areas, and my discussions with the governor prior to agreeing to take the job back again was that we need to do something about getting the delivery of services back to the people that should be have some expectation of being having crimes investigated and feeling safe and protecting the resources. That's a broad brush goal of what I want to do. As I've told everybody and the governor, the OMB people know it too, you know, next year is going to be my budget, and I intend to put one together that's totally justified, is meaningful and understandable to the legislative people, have to see what the priorities are. And I've discussed some of those here before. I wanted to bring the Criminal Investigation Bureau back to a statewide Criminal Investigation Bureau that it used to be, which it is not, in my opinion, today, because of the severe cutbacks in resources and manpower. We're up to about 60 now identifiable. I've had the group tasked with finding every unsolved homicide that there is laying around the state. We're about 60 of those now, and I think that's something that I certainly want to dedicate some effort to, and I think it's a statewide function for a state agency to do that. To build the agency back up to where it's available to help the smaller communities or anybody that needs help in specialized investigations. White-collar crime, we have million-dollar fraud cases sitting there going on and not being investigated because of the lack of ability, manpower, and facilities to do it. I just want to get it back to being the role of what it used to be. And there's a lot of frustration. I sent a questionnaire out to every employee in the department when I came back. I have 211 of them, and some of them, they did put a lot of effort in, all the way down to clerk typist. I mean, everybody was encouraged to respond, and a lot of them did. I spent many weekends reading it. It gave me a pretty good indication of what's going on and the morale of the department's been pretty well down, and a lot of it was not that they're complaining about personal things, but lack of training. There's been years, the last 5 years, training has been almost non-existent. We had a lot of liability issues laying out there with in-service training, use of force policy. We're behind in that. Just to keep up the management, mid-level management supervisory training has been almost non-existent. There's just a lot of things that's going to take to play catch-up. I could go on. I'm sure that some of you probably here have some items of particular interest you want to question me about, so maybe in order so you can go on to some other business, I'll stop there and we'll go to questions.
Let me say that I think the whole committee was quite impressed when you were here before and with an overview on the budget and the department about how honest you were with this about what some of the cuts that were proposed by the administration would do to your department, and it appeared really that you weren't real happy about the budget that that you put out. Let me talk a little bit about what's in your department. Amy, you said in your Senate confirmation hearings that you thought there were some things probably within the department that really shouldn't be there, and you wanted to focus more on what you think the role is of Department of Public Safety. Could you comment on, and you didn't really say you wanted to do away with these, and, let's talk about the Domestic Violence Council or I believe the private organizations, I'm trying to think of what they're called, but in my town, the Valdez, we have Advocates for Victims of Violence. They get their grants through your department. How do you think those grants should be handled? Is that something that we should get rid of and not be doing in our budget cutting process, or do you think we should just go through someone else? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, where I'm coming from with that, Mr. Chairman, is also along with the budget cuts, the department's taken a 30-some percent hit and cut in management and supervisory positions in the last 5 years. I have less staff now to run the department than I had when I was there 12, 14 years ago. I have one deputy, one special assistant, which is being taken out of the Senate budget, and one secretary of my staff in my headquarters. These other functions I'm talking about have evolved in the last 10 or 12 years, and they keep adding things. When I first started in public, we were the state police and the fire marshal's office and the disaster response. And then we got fish and wildlife. We got the Division of Motor Vehicles. We have 19 contract jails. We have then under the umbrella of public safety, Police Standards Council, Council of Domestic Violence, Violent Crimes Compensation, the State Crime Lab, State Training Academy. Of course, the Crime Lab and Academy fit in with what our basic mission. So I looked at the department from a primary mission statement of what is the mission of the department, especially in looking in line with the constitutional mandate that the state government should be organized in not more than 20 departments by similar function. So I can start down the list with, and then we've added, we oversee a BPSO program for the villages with 125 people there, and that's a pretty good undertaking from a management standpoint to oversight that, training, day-to-day supervision. We have a Department of Corrections, and so why is public safety contracted for jails? We go back to the executive orders back to Governor Egan's time, even when you look at that, and I forget the exact number, but I kind of like history a little bit and see where we come from and what was the intent of this all along. And that was prior to having a full-fledged Department of Corrections. And the statutes and corrections clearly give that authority to contract to the Commissioner of Corrections. We do it because the statute doesn't say that we can't do it. And there's a lot of reasons we got into that. But that's something that's awfully time-consuming. It's something that's primarily a corrections function, not a police function. This is around jails in any place that you can find. So that's something that I think that ought to be shifted over. There's several millions of dollars there, and I'm looking at it selfishly from a management standpoint. My budget's plus or minus whatever, $80 million. Well, people look at public safety and they think of one thing, generally, that's a state trooper. When you start chopping all of this, the jails and community service, court service officers, and all of these things that are not directly related to primary job of public protection and law enforcement, you get down to the state troopers, you know, our total budget with all of these things accounts for about 4% of the total state operating budget. But when you extract all these other services, and they're all important, I'm not saying that any of them should necessarily be done away with. But you get down then to, there's less than 1% of the total state budget for all fish and wildlife enforcement, commercial fisheries and everything statewide. There's less than 2% of the total state operating budget for the whole state trooper and criminal investigation bureau. Not much, not a whole lot of dedication to what I consider one of the basic functions of state government.
Well, Commissioner, let me interject there. Are you saying that you want to get them out of your budget just so people can focus on how much money is really being spent on police and fish and game protection? Are you saying that we would save any money by moving them out of your budget?
No, I told you, selfishly, it was a management standpoint.
So
but the other side of it is some of these other departments are certainly far better geared up and have the expertise to be involved in running these programs. I think the corrections is the ones with the expertise to run jail programs. The other one that is evolved into a program which is not directly related to law enforcement anymore is the court service officer program. Those people are, at one time they were state troopers. Then they became JSOs, judicial service officers. Then they went back to troopers. And now we're back, they're called CSOs. You know, I keep changing.
So you think they should be in the
court budget? What they do, they're not certified at the academy. They have limited authority, limited to servicing the court, serving the civil process, transporting prisoners in and out of the court building, and taking care of court security. And we oversight it, but they're not law enforcement as such, as a full-fledged peace officer. And so it's evolved into that, and in other jurisdictions, if you look around the other places in the country, generally that's in the court or a sheriff's department or somebody provides, or our corrections department provides that kind of service.
Would this take a statute change to change these people, or would this be probably something the governor could do under executive
order? Well, it's something between, it's an interesting concept because it's two separate branches of government. And how we got into one branch of government in the beginning, it's statehood, it's in Title 22. By statute, I'm the chief executive officer of the Supreme Court, also besides being commissioner of public safety. I read that.
Do we need to change that?
The statute is where that evolves from, and then it says that we wait upon the court and do all the thing that the court tells us to, and it takes you from the Supreme Court to the Superior Court right on through by different sections of that statute. So now, whether the governor can change a statute to require the judiciary branch to take on that service, I don't know. That's an interesting legal question. But we got there some way by legislation. No.
The record should show that we've been joined by Representative Greenberg. Excuse me, Commissioner. Sweet.
hoped I named the right chapter 22 now, yeah. So that
you might list for me here just the things that you believe should be taken out of your department. We've talked about CSOs. I assume that you're including the Council on Domestic Violence.
I think the Council...
That should go to Hess?
Yes, I do, and I get a lot of resistance from the people in the Council, and I respect them all very much because their service is a vital service. They had over 50,000 admissions to the shelters last year. And I can recall, as a young police officer, before these kind of things were available, of getting into cases where there were battered women, children. I used to have to take them home to my wife to take care of. That we were really hurting for places to have this, or you went and tried to find someone you knew or a friend or a church or something. And of course, domestic violence has become something that I thought I would never see. We always used to have what we called family beasts. But I guess maybe it was there, we just weren't as aware of it at that time, the same as child abuse.
Who else, Commissioner?
Prisoner transportation.
Prisoners.
In fact, Corrections has approached me about taking that on because to have a full-fledged certified trooper just moving prisoners from one place to another, with the exception of when we arrest them or extraditions and go outside, that's something else.
Well, that's what I was wondering. You kind of talked about the jails maybe should be under Corrections too, and I wonder, it seems like Corrections really is after somebody's been gone to court and been sentenced and directed, and of course a lot of the jails are not, that may not be the biggest use of a jail.
Well, we're using jails for limited sentence prisoners, but yet we're using people who are not qualified correctional professionals to provide whatever service you use. And they haven't, honestly, that some of these jails are not what they should be, and we've never been fully funded. We're constantly hassled with municipalities. In fact, I just backed off. I think my deputy here with Kodiak was going to file a lawsuit against the state under jail here about a week ago, and then we finally got some money kicked loose to pay up to do it. But that takes a lot of time and effort away from what I consider we could be working on fighting crime and major crime and working the kind of things we should be.
Representative Moyer.
Thanks, Chairman. Perhaps I could just approach this from a little different angle on the Council for a moment, Commissioner. And I assume that if you want to move it, that you would be recommending to the Governor some kind of executive order or change in legislation. And from your limited exposure to it now, in doing so, would you recommend any changes to the structure of the Council or its function? In other words, now it has an independent board, executive director. Would you leave that aspect alone?
I would no recommendation to change it. Like I say, the problem I have, and I'm really honest with you, is that there are just too many different kinds of hats that I have to wear right now with things that are not from a law enforcement expertise to deal with that. I have no direct control over the Council and their operation. And again, quite selfishly, we're housed in this Butler building down here that I helped move in 1970 temporarily for 5 years. That's the public safety headquarters. You can find very little in that building that has directly to do with public safety anymore because we don't have the room to do it. If I had the proper room, half of that staff that I have to farm out to Anchorage and things would be in my headquarters where I could direct the department. That kind of control is not there. The other alternative, I'm going to look for some lease money because I have to get some staff back of planning and research on my staff to do that's gone away. I used to have and take up community council and domestic violence is in there, the Violent Crimes Compensation Board and police standards and those things that aren't directly related to my day-to-day operation because I have no operational control over any of those. So I'm going to look for some lease space at a minimum just so I can get some of my own staff in there to help me run the department. I'm just thinking of a better place where it could be administered. And I know that I'm getting a lot of heat because, boy, all the people involved in that, and I understand it. They're just, we're not going to do that. They like being here because they're afraid if they get over to another agency somewhere that they're going to get lost in the darkness. So, unfortunately, over the years, that's how we acquired Fish and Wildlife and motor vehicles. they didn't like them. So we had a pretty fair reputation of management, and we kept acquiring these things. And I, somebody told me the other day, I'm not a typical bureaucrat. You're not wanting to grow. You're trying to get rid of things. And I said, well, whatever. I want to do what I need to do the best way I can.
So just think for a second, then. So then in discussions you may have with Commissioner Mala, you wouldn't be saying, we're proposing you receive this counsel, and by the way, if I were you, I'd reconsider its structure or something, because won't have any control over them, Ted.
I think it's structured fine. I don't want control over it.
Thank you.
Well, I think you made a very good argument, though, for why you would keep it yourself. Because, as you said, before it was there, you had to take them home to your wife. Well, obviously, public safety is probably right where the domestic violence council should be.
I have no problem with that, as long as people recognize the other things I need to do. While those things have grown, troopers and fish and wildlife have lost personnel and been cut.
Well, and I agree with
you. My budget grows, so there's something wrong. And I don't know any other way to approach it, trying to correct it.
Representative,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Domestic violent councils, commissioners, I'm sure they're not new to Alaska. You know or have any knowledge how they're handled in other states?
No.
Mr. Chairman, I think the commissioner makes some good points. On the other hand, in campaigning and in door-to-door work, the public perceives corrections as troopers. And it's very difficult to portray the budget for the troopers when you've got some activities in the budget that could very well be best served elsewhere. I notice that quite a bit. If we're talking about trooper service, protection of the public, it's very difficult to go through the budget and find those areas that don't affect the troopers as a whole. I did, at one time this year, try to take the court officers out of public safety's budget. I've worked as an intake officer for the state of Alaska, and the simplicity of that is very real. These officers are responsible to the court, not the Commissioner of Public Safety. The domestic violence, I suggested that. There was a lot of resistance from Representative Ulmer, Representative Brown, and a few other people that seemed to think that the troopers was where it should be. I don't know. I think that the troopers would probably handle most of the cases as far as the initial shot, boom, and then get them to the home. But whether or not that's where it should be, I tend to think that it needs to be somewhere other than public safety, so that we can justify public safety's budget by their definition in the statutes.
Well, I guess the philosophical question here is, are you going to save money by moving somebody someplace else? Obviously, your goal is to move as many out as you can so that your budget looks lower, so that you can then justify increasing it for the services that you think are your primary goal.
Why?
Which I would agree are underfunded and understaffed.
I would say not necessarily make my budget look lower, but with a realistic looking budget, if you put the primary statutory requirements of public safety on. And if you look at other public safety departments around the country, you'll find, well, I just came from a conference with the 14 Western State Police Chiefs, and you start comparing departments, and they start saying, what do you do? And they start naming these off, and they go, geez, you know, they just stagger, because they do criminal law enforcement, traffic, maybe a crime lab, liquor control, and gambling enforcement. And that's about as broad as they get. It's enforcement focused, and unless and until that changes, I guess, from my recollection of what the department's mission is. And all of these are good problems. I know probably that. But I'm looking at the same time, I don't have enough staff to help me wrestle with these various kind of professional different kinds of expertise that's required.
I'm sure the other commissioners are going to obviously say the same thing. I know that, for example, Health and Social Services is a very large department. department also getting cut back. I'm sure Commissioner Mall would say, well, you know, at the best he's going to say, go ahead, I'll take it, but you make sure I have all the funding for it also. And still we're really not serving any money. And let's go to Representative Bruckman, and I'll move us on to another topic. Go ahead, Representative Bruckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, in your role as commissioner, is part of that role to lobby the governor for more funding, to explain what your department does in all the different areas, including domestic violence, which is not an increase. What do you see your role?
Well, certainly. I mean, not only as commissioner, but as a role that I perform in several meetings before I agreed to take the job back. Mm-hmm. And the governor is not unaware of this. He, I'm not a real close associate with governors. I've known him for years. But every time I run into him over the last 8 or 10 years, he says, boy, he keeps remarking, and I was amazed that he was even paying attention about what was happening to public safety. And he said, you know, we got to do something to change that back. Well, so here he is, and here I am. And he's not unaware of it. And I think that this budget this year is not necessarily my budget or his budget. I mean, it's the budget that we kind of picked up with in a short time, doing the best of what you've got to work with. I went to my first budget hearing 2 days after I got sworn in, and it's kind of hard to do that with. Next year we'll have a little better mixture of ingredients, so the bread's going to rise a little better.
And then, as you know, the troopers in the Hillside are...
I've heard of the Hillside.
You've heard that, right? I do want to say thank you for all the help you've seen in the Senate District and my office and on that issue. But it seems to me that down the road, in the next year or two, there'll be an effort to withdraw troopers from different parts of the state and have a local entity take over with local police power. Is that something that you support? What are your plans for the Department of Public Safety, especially troopers statewide? This issue is going to be repeated in the state.
Well, not too many, because I did a review of that. There are 191 identifiable communities in the state that are organized in some sort of government. 11 of them are considered regional or combined city borough type. 3 of those 11 have their own area-wide police. Then you get down into the first and second class cities, and then there are 45 unincorporated communities. There's a total of 191. Right now, Department of Public Safety is providing the law enforcement services to 145 out of 191 organized communities, regional, first, and second, or you're organized as a community, but you're unincorporated in any kind of governmental stuff. So I have to take a look at that. And what is the role of a state agency versus a municipality? And once you incorporate, especially the first or second or home rule city, one of the obvious and one of the only 3 mandated powers they acquire is the ability for taxation. Taxation, education, and land use. As I think I stated here last time, my decision as the manager is what level of service can I provide as much of an equal basis statewide, considering the geographic boundaries and the size of the state, and the level of the resources we have on an equitable basis to everyone. And the reason we look at Hillside, which is getting so much attention, Hillside is a part of a organized home rule municipality, which has, under the existing law, good, bad, or different, the governmental ability as a service area to provide that to a population of 30-some thousand people bigger than the city of Juneau. And there are other communities I have that are unincorporated, or they're second-class cities that have a $100,000 a year budget, no tax bases. And I don't deliver service there on a routine around-the-clock patrol basis. So it's a real dilemma for me to make that decision, and that's where I'm coming from with that. Mm-hmm.
Because by law, you're still mandated to protect the citizens from criminal activity.
But it doesn't say at what level. And that's
right.
If you wanted to make me a formula-based program like education and health and social services and say I got to have 2 troopers for every 1,000 people in the state of Alaska, I'd welcome that.
Question to you that may be a little bit off the cuff, but do you have arrest powers?
Do I?
Yeah.
Certainly.
Just curious. Your stand on binding arbitration for social human services employees, do you support the current setup where we do have binding arbitration?
I personally have observed and worked on here much. The binding arbitration, I personally don't. I just have problems with binding arbitration, especially in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Because the problem is, based on historically what happened, I don't know of any Alaska arbiters that sent in to begin with, and they came, we just had an arbitration hearing, I think a guy came from Boston, or they come from Montana, or they come from California. And I think if we're going to have binding arbitration, that one person arbitration system also from out of state, why can't they be from Alaska and at least have a 3-member panel of people to get a little better decision? The decisions that come down, in my opinion, and I've worked on both sides of the fence, are not made to be out of really good decisions of what's best for the state of Alaska.
But will you accept the arbitrator's ruling? Because that's
what choice do I have?
Right.
Commissioner, would you prefer to change those people to a different category so they have the right to strike rather than binding arbitration?
I would certainly be willing.
Would you be making that recommendation to the governor to come to us?
I could, yeah.
Well, I guess I'm curious at how you're gonna handle a lot of this. You talk about binding arbitration you don't like, talk about moving certain things out of your department. Will there be proposals coming from the administration to the legislature to make these changes?
Yeah, whether there will be or not, I don't know. I've communicated my feelings to the governor and the governor's office. So that's up to them.
And this is probably why rather than us making moves to do these things, I sort of feel like we should wait and allow the governor to make the proposed changes that he wants to make, because if you guys that want to change things, and you have some, in some of them, you probably have some very good arguments here, that I think that would be something that
sure.
Maybe well, next year, I mean, granted you guys are new, this is your, you got here right, not much before we did, and didn't have a time to propose, but I suspect that by the time we come back next January, that there will be more changes probably made unilaterally where it's possible, and proposes for us to change statutes or concur with executive orders to meet some of these changes that you would want to do.
Be more coherent next year. Yes.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A few questions. I'm handing out some follow-up correspondence from our last hearing. I think, Mary, don't we have is there a second letter you duplicated too? No, that's one in a response, and then there's a second in a response.
Well, I didn't realize you wanted additional copies. For
okay. I'd like first, Commissioner, you. Or at least presumably your department, submitted a Department of Public Safety House Finance Overview outline during the budget hearings. Was that your position?
Well, at that time, yeah, it's changed probably 30 times since that time.
Let me focus on one thing on this, and this is in the white tab in the last tab in the book, folks. First page, item number 2, possible legislative changes needed. Mandatory insurance. Repeal the mandatory insurance law, AS 28.22. The financial responsibility program, AS 28.20, will continue, which accomplishes most of the goals of the mandatory insurance program. The financial responsibility program provides more, pardon me, incentive for the liable party to settle claims. Was that your position at the time?
At the time, we had to take that budget cut, but I think that's been restored.
Okay, so that's no longer.
That's no longer. A lot of this has been restored.
Fine.
I wish Ken Bischoff was here. If you got a lot of the, you have to go back look what's been restored.
No, I'm not so concerned about the budgetary aspect. I am concerned on the philosophical aspect. Philosophically, is it your position that the mandatory insurance law should be repealed?
No. No.
That was simply a budget-cutting device.
That's right.
Okay. With respect to your comments about the your duties in Title 22. Did you get a copy of the page?
I haven't looked at it last few days, though.
Okay. I, frankly, in my all my years of practice, I've never seen this before.
Have you? Well, I got a lot of power.
I can see that. And I don't know if the...
But the court never asked me about being the executive officer and what to do anything for me. Change the things in the court if I could.
I frankly don't know if the executive director of the court system was at the time a constitutional officer.
I can tell you a little history about
this. Was this predating the? Does everybody get a copy of the second packet?
Mm-hmm.
Did you get one, Dave?
Mm-hmm.
No. I think I'm mature.
And it goes on.
Anyway.
Which one?
This. Oh, no, I've got the original. Okay. I'm wondering, because subsequently we made Mr. Snowden's position a constitutional office. I'm not sure if that was in the original constitution or not. This just looks to me like the term executive officer basically means that you're to serve and execute the process. That's the serve writs of execution and stuff like that. And help with the grand jury, act as bailiffs and bailiffs in court, and sort of act, I would say, with all lack of respect, as a gopher kind of agency there, which they really don't use you folks for anymore, do they?
No, the Chief Justice, we've over the years, because we never had the manpower to do it, they started authorizing licensing private process service because we couldn't keep up with it. They started using the bailiffs. And I talked to Chief Justice the other day. In fact, he said, you know, we'd let you off pretty easy. If they held us strictly to this, I'd probably have to have 150 people just to take care of the court. And, which is interesting, on the back page in section 130 in paragraph B, that if that statutory authority was really given to me unlimited, I have the responsibility to provide sufficient personnel. I almost said, gee, I come in and say, authorize me 150 people, you have to do it. Of course, that's why I get sort of a laugh out of statute sometimes.
Have you promulgated regulations under this chapter?
We have, which is the court service office regulations and those things, and we've had them for years on service process and writs and sales and executions and all that sort of stuff. That's the kind of regulatory authority.
One thing that I'd like to see, since my staff and I have talked just exactly about the legal and constitutional issue that you have raised, whether these kinds of functions between the executive and the judicial branch can be done by executive order. I frankly don't think they can, because the executive order provision in the Constitution says that the governor can realign functions within the executive branch, and that's not within the executive branch. I think it would require legislation. And I talked just a minute ago to the chairman whether this committee ought to consider introducing some legislation to accomplish that, but it was his feeling, I think, that it's probably better coming from either the governor or the chief justice, or maybe both by request, something to maybe repeal and reenact this or update it or something.
I'm not sure that the chief justice is going to want to do this, because talking to Mr. Snowden, I don't think they want to do it, but then that's what I'm going to do with the Chief Justice pretty soon. But it's an issue that really needs to be addressed. This happened because the statehood had just transferred over to state what had been being done by the old U.S. Marshal's Office
to the
federal courts. And so public safety ends up being the last, since we don't have counties, we're the sheriff, we're the highway patrol, we're the state police. In that one division, not counting fish and wildlife, motor vehicles, and everything else we do. So, you know, we've got a lot of work to do, and I have damn little to do it with. That's why I'm trying to get rid of this stuff.
I understand. Now, there are different functions in here. If I may go on to this, Mr. Chairman. The functions under this article include number one being bailiffs. Who are the present bailiffs? Are they your people?
No. In the outliner is in the bush, when we have court, the district court and so forth, and you're there with the case, you show up, you're there, so you're automatically, I guess, called the bail. But I think they hire, the court system has their own bailiffs that do that.
Yeah, I'd like you to talk to the court system about that, because that's something that should be changed in here. That's number one. Number two are the bailiffs, with respect to the juries, are hired by the court. They are definitely not troopers. The people who are the court service officers, are they troopers?
No, they're court service officers.
Okay, so
but they're in public safety.
But they're in public safety.
They're in my budget. They're in public safety, but it's a special class that has limited powers.
Okay.
They're not certified. Is that right, Gil?
Yes, sir.
They're not certified by police standards. They only have authority when they're doing something for the court. They have no authority off outside of that. They don't have the arrest powers or anything else except the court security also.
You were saying?
They have only 2 weeks of training.
Only 2 weeks of training, okay. And you said you did not think that the court system would want to take that over. They're content leaving it where they are.
I think that's probably their attitude.
Okay.
Let us run it for them, is what it does.
So maybe this does all adequately cover that. And the third, and I've often thought this was a real waste, that you people do serve warrants, and you have full troopers serving warrants. That seems to me a waste of high-powered talent to serve warrants.
Well,
I'm not talking about arrest warrants. I'm talking about
criminal summonses.
I'm talking about criminal summonses and civil complaints.
Yeah, I agree. I think this criminal arrest warrants is something that probably ought to stay with the
yes.
police. And extraditions and those type of things.
Yes.
But the civil process and just some of the serving the paper for full-fledged, you know, experienced, trained police officer, it's kind of a... That's why the court service officer is involved. They're trained for 2 weeks. They're serving some civil process. They take care of the security of the court, and they bring prisoners from the jail to the courtroom.
Yes.
Strictly the court function.
I would like to see the administration and the judiciary propose, Mr. Chairman, something to us, and I don't know if it requires legislation. I think it probably does.
Yeah.
With respect to the bailiffs and the civil process and the criminal complaints. Because I would think that we should be able to maybe contract some of that out.
Well, I think that would be caught. We're talking about saving money.
Yes.
Have a lower level than a state trooper type trooper union position doing this.
And we could use the troopers for real law enforcement stuff.
I like that.
Would you be willing, Mr. Chairman, may I make a request? That on those two issues, with respect, what I'd like to see us do is, if you would look at Article 3 here, and the problems with respect to the bailiffs, and with respect to the civil section of your trooper's office, and the criminal complaint aspect, and make a recommendation to this committee as to whether you would like to see how you would suggest changing those functions with respect to making it more efficient and less costly, and if legislation is necessary, whether the administration in conjunction with the Supreme Court can propose the introduction of some legislation or make suggestions to this committee.
Well, there'll be some resistance, strong resistance, as you've already felt. I'm sure that I was aware there were a lot of lobbying going on by the CSOs during the last couple of months here. When we were talking about looking at taking a budget cut of 31 trooper positions, and so in lieu of losing those full-fledged troopers, I was going to cut the CSOs and do that. But so you're going to get the union, I'm telling you.
No, that's not what I have in mind. What I'm talking about is the bailiffs for the juries. Those people right now are court employees. They are, for example, law clerks are sometimes used for that function. And so you people don't really do that under Article 3. Now, the court, in fact, does the bailiffs.
Mm-hmm.
When they talk about attend to and wait upon grand and petit juries, I think that this should be amended to exclude that function and give that to the court system. And that's the unions are not at all involved in that. The law clerks.
Yeah, we used to do it.
Yeah, I understand.
It just got so large that we didn't have the manpower to
What I'm suggesting is you go through and you look and you clean this article up. And the same with the civil process and stuff like that. I don't know that we've got plenty of business for the troopers to do, and the service of civil process and stuff. And in Anchorage, they serve domestic violence restraining orders and stuff. That's done by the city police now as a result of legislation we passed 3 or 4 years ago.
Well, I could clean that up real one sentence. All these duties are hereby transferred to the court system.
Well, I think it's going to require a little more finesse than that. Secondly, Mr. Chairman, in our last hearing with you, asked about the transfer of functions from these contract jails. And my recollection is that you indicated you were looking into that. And I'm wondering what progress you're making on transferring the contract jails from public safety to corrections.
We're negotiating with corrections on that. That's an internal thing, which there's nothing by statute. We're not doing it by statute, except a couple of things that we're going to also look at, and corrections is asked about. By statute, we have to transport all prisoners, all right? And that's something that corrections has asked me about, them assuming that function. And I think that you know, once they're committed, the committed prisoner is what we're talking about, because that commitment says you're committed to the custody of the Commissioner of Corrections. And so we've had some discussions on that. You know, if you're on this side of the wall, you're in the custody, and if you're on the other side, you're still in the custody of the Commissioner of Corrections. Well, what we've had is once they leave the institution, and by statute, that we've been transporting all the prisoners every time they move so far. And I think that's another.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, let's go to your question on the transport of prisoners. There's a specific statute in AS 33 that requires that you transport the prisoners. I carried on some correspondence with the former Commissioner of Corrections, and I'm not sure if it also included the former Commissioner of Public Safety. I think it may have, suggesting that statute be amended in Title 33 to transfer that function from public safety to corrections. And they gave me a bureaucratic response that we really RSA this and stuff like that, and we don't want to change the statute. I was not going to rock the boat, but I was not very satisfied. And I'm wondering if the new administration would like to take a look at that statute and transfer that.
We are taking a look at it, and I think you'll see some legislation coming up to do that. Working with the Commissioner of Corrections office approached me and asked if I would support that change, and I said that.
Great, because that simply is a simple statutory amendment.
Right.
We have to do that. Now, with respect to the contract jails, let's focus on that. What are you going to do about that? Is that going to be changed as well?
Probably not till next budget cycle. But we're working on doing that. As you see in Title 33, if you read that, the whole thing, the Commissioner of Corrections is authorized to enter into these contracts with municipalities. The public safety is not mentioned in doing that. We evolved into it over the years just because we made things work.
If you don't have the statutory authority, can you legally even do it now?
We do it because the statute doesn't prohibit us from doing it, but there's also part of Title 33, which makes the Department of Public Safety responsible for the care, custody, and feeding of a prisoner charged with violation of law prior to arraignment or until booked into a jail, okay?
Well, that would seem to imply you don't have authority afterwards when read in conjunction with the other.
Well, it depends on or committed to the corrections. And if you look in Title 33 in the definitions, there's a definition of a facility, a correctional facility, and state correctional facility. And you got to read that really real closely to do that. And when you go back, and the Commissioner of Corrections is responsible for providing all this for any person charged or convicted. And that's where I'm saying that, hey, they've got that responsibility. It's kind of, you know, we do it because we're not actually prohibited from it. And we've been doing it for years. But I think it's a function more after performed by corrections.
I understand, and it may be something that we need to get a legal opinion, the legislature needs to get a legal opinion one.
Yes, and I've got lots of old AG's opinions on these issues going back for 15 or 20 years in my desk drawer. I'd be happy to visit with you sometime.
I would like to. I think that maybe that's something else we should do. That's all my questions.
Representative Shelkat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Grunberg, I'd be more than happy to work with you on this. I think there's some room for improvement there. Commissioner, I spoke last time you were in front of this committee about fish and wildlife protection. I understand as it sits right now, we don't even have two officers in the Kenai Peninsula. I know these people, South Kenai Peninsula. I know these people that work down there. I know that their guidelines and their more or less their rules are when there's a commercial fishing opening, that's what they're primarily doing. And yet I see daily on the Kenai Peninsula people taking more kings than they should, people taking more clams than they should, people shooting moose out of season. I'm one of the reasons, Mr. Chairman, that I'm in favor of cleaning up the department's budget from the standpoint of enforcement is due to the fishing game, or what I perceive to be the lack of fishing game enforcement. In the areas where most of the people will sport and commercial fishing. And in your mind, understanding that you definitely go with the governor's budget proposal this year, but in your mind, do you have enough fish and game officers?
Well, no, and I've looked at that on a pretty broad scale, Representative Choquette. And we had about 120 fish and wildlife officers 10 years ago. I have 84 today, and there's no question the last 10 years what's happened to the population and the increased commercial fisheries that we're dealing with and the impact where you've got a problem where you're at. I understand that, but we have a real problem out at Peninsula Evolutionary. We're 10 years behind it, and all these new processors have shown up and that we know that they're working. And another thing that I think the role we could play, but enough coverage, is we don't know how many tens of millions of dollars of excise fish tax we're missing off these fish processors that are coming into the 3-mile limit, and it's an area we need to look at. Because I would say, can I get unserious for a second?
Be careful.
If you keep seeing all these things, I'm going to deputize you. You can help us out a lot.
Well, as a matter of fact, Mr. Chairman, I wrote you a letter just a little while ago. We also called fish and game. We found some deer carcasses on the beach last week just out the road here that were fresh. The point, I guess, my question, Mr. Burton, is, can you see any viable means that you can separate sports and commercial within your fish and game, within your fish and wildlife officers, and provide some type of service? Because it's almost a joke on the peninsula. I've got friends that haven't gotten a fishing license in the last 5 or 6 years because they've never been checked.
Yeah.
They don't listen to one king a day. They don't listen to... And commercial fishing is just as flagrant. I've seen them baiting hooks for a halibut opening 10 days ahead of time.
I understand that. We know it goes on. My people complain about it all the time. But you know, it just so many seasons and such a big area to cover with 84 people. You know, the old story, you're spread out from South Carolina to Minnesota to California. And with all the pressure on that commercial fishery, probably... The only thing that we can come close to doing something this year is I think we got all of at least the seasonal positions restored, which they had been cutting out in the past year. And that's where we, granted, you know, this is a seasonal thing, fish and wildlife for the most part. I know exactly what you're talking about, down in the Kenai, the Russian River areas, and down below there, down in the Nilchik area. I know exactly. I've heard a lot of people talk about it. But if you've got 5 or 6 people to cover the area and you've got a couple of commercial fisheries open up in Cook Inlet at the same time, just a matter of, you know, a big pallet with a thin bucket of paint.
Well, I think it's obviously a statewide issue.
Oh, yes, sir.
You've got the same problem in Prince James Town, but I think you've got the same problem in subsistence hunting and fishing in the North Slope.
Yes.
It's statewide. It's using fish wheels and selling for subsistence and selling fish. And we all know what's happening, and we're not dealing with it. Excuse me,
Mr. Chairman. This is what police work is about, Representative Grunberg. This is what public safety stands for. And what's happening to us is we're lax in our duties of protecting our resources, both on a commercial base And sports base. Commissioner, if you could answer my question, do you think that you would be amenable to setting up a system within your department? You can't, you train for seasonal help, they still have to go through the academy, right? The seasonal help?
Not necessarily.
And they carry a gun?
Most of them have been officers of some kind or another before. Some of them, in fact, are ex-troopers that come to work seasonally.
Would you, sir, be amenable to some type of a division so that both areas can be equally covered? It just so happens that we're commercial fishing at the same time we're sport fishing. You can't split those up, or you can't dedicate officers to sports versus dedicating them to making sure the commercial openings are adhered to?
Well, I could talk to the Fish and Wildlife people about it, but just what little I know about it at this point, sitting here talking to you, it's just a matter of you can't be in two places at once. It's a matter of priority. And, you know,
that's exactly my point. It's a matter of priority. And basically, Mr. Chairman, we're not doing the job. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Shokat. Representative Brookman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Burton, I want to make sure I understood a statement you made a few moments ago. Did you say there's nothing in regulations or in statute that would prohibit Department of Law from issuing a contract? Can you and have your department?
Contract
service, for instance, trooper service.
Oh, we were talking about the jails.
Right.
Yeah. We're talking about contracting with municipalities to provide jails.
So that also...
You agree to contract with Hillside to provide your own law enforcement?
Right.
And we pay you for it?
You pay us?
Well, that's what we do to municipalities. We pay them to run the jails. We don't provide the staffing. It's just a contractual relationship.
Right. No, I mean, on service in the Hillside, can the municipality of Anchorage contract with you or a part of the municipality or trooper service?
I don't know. I suppose Department of Law probably can answer that. Some years ago, we contracted with municipalities before Juneau and Douglas became part of the same municipal area.
Mm-hmm.
We had a part-time 4 hours a day to go over there and drive through and enforce parking in Douglas and the troopers in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And those kind of things, but they were very specifically limited type of contracts. And, and that's been 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. The question is whether he would want it to.
Okay, that's...
With his limited people.
True.
Well, if the contract would be for new people, additional people to do it, provide, you know, you get a contract relationship, you got to be sure you can fulfill the terms of that contract, like any other contractual relationship. I would not enter into a contract to go in to provide a service with less than adequate resources to do it with.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, let's look at the Hillside. If the municipality were to provide police service for the Hillside, I would think they'd want to do it themselves and not have the troopers.
Right, but if the Hillside would prefer to continue with trooper service and be willing to pay for it, there is a great possibility that the Hillsiders would like to contract with the troopers.
Would you want to do that or have to?
You know, whether it's basically a municipal structured government, I just don't think that's a proper role, personally, to do it. But to answer your question, that's something that would have to be looked at the time, and I'd certainly have to run through the Department of Law
mm-hmm.
to see what they would say, yeah, you should or shouldn't, we don't want you, and of course the policy of the governor's office.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner, let me,
I'll do anything somebody will pay for.
But you
don't say that. You can get in trouble for that.
Well, especially since we're paying for all these things that you've mentioned so far, and you're still trying to get rid of them. So, you in the budget, you recommended doing away with the court service officers, right?
If I had to take and lose 31 trooper positions, I would.
We funded those positions.
That's funded, and that's everything's.
Will you be recommending the governor to veto those funds? And let me make a little statement with this. We have been told by the Commissioner of Administration that his recommendation will be that the governor stick with his original budget proposal as far as numbers. He did not go so far as to say he'll be recommending veto specific things. But your budget recommended that those positions would be gone. Will you be recommending to the governor that those positions be vetoed out
now
of
that you're back?
Yes.
Honestly, no. I won't.
Would you, the hillside positions, my understanding is in our budget that they are funded for hillside work through November or something, or
October 31.
Are those positions then gone up to that point?
I hope not, because if the city takes over hillside and those seven or eight positions I've got would probably all would stay in the Anchorage area, because I would put three or four of them over into this criminal investigation bureau that fast, and I would get back to somebody made an agreement a couple of years ago that we stayed in hillside, that the Anchorage Police Department took care of the traffic on the Glen Highway, and I don't understand that how it happened. I mean, it's kind of backwards. The state highway is traffic enforcement, is a state function. I would put back a traffic team on there, and certainly we need to work on that, what I call Blood Alley, and everybody else does, from South Anchorage to Girdwood in the Glacier area down. Very seldom is there any traffic enforcement on there. Those are where places which I see as really a state function.
Do you still want to use the position?
Oh, I could use it anywhere.
Is the budget that the House passed, and my understanding is the Senate is very close to it, do you recall how much higher that is than the governor's proposal? It is higher. I just can't remember how much.
Why? Well,
the Senator Porcheau said last night about $100 million.
No, I'm just talking about this department.
Oh, $100 million. Yeah, my department, yeah.
You wish.
You know, I don't. I looked at so many figures. I was in Saturday going through that too. I think it's probably $1.5 million or $2 million.
Well, how are you going to? What are your recommendations going to be to the governor on that?
My recommendation to the governor?
Yes.
To me?
The governor's position is to cut 5% from the budget. What's your recommendation?
I think in public safety, you're going to see the governor's probably a little different attitude, because he understands, in looking at all the state agencies, that this one is one of the most vital and is one that has suffered the most. And he has made that to me verbally I think our budget would be pretty much allowed to go, because it's justified.
No, I'm really not asking what his position. I'm asking you what your recommendation is going to be to the governor.
My recommendation is the things that we have managed to. And a lot of these increases have been approved by, and most of them have come back through. OMB has taken a second look. You know, they came back immediately after I got here within a couple of weeks, and we put back in $2.5 to $3 million in vital areas, and I had a chance to look at it and go back. So I think, for the most part, and there's some, as everybody wants their own little thing in through the legislature, there's some of that shows up in there, but not very much. And none of it, is really not needed. And that's what I'm telling the governor. It's all needed, and I think he appreciates that.
He said a few minutes ago that you give me the money and we'll do anything, basically. I'm going to read to you out of a little memo I have here about last year. The Department of Public Safety embarked on a program to bring firefighting training to rural communities and marine vessels in order to save lives and property. Fire in an isolated community. Goes on. Public safety officials receive authority from the legislative budget amendment to accept $60,000 in tuition fees to conduct the training. Mm-hmm. Rural communities and boat operators see this training as a bargain. They're willing to pay for it. The program costs the state nothing as the fees paid for the program.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the good part. The bad part is that this year's proposed budget eliminates all funding for these firefighting training programs. And even after a second review by the Office of Management and Budget, administrative officials have declined to reinstate the authorization to release those services. Services people want and doesn't cost the state a dime. Your comments?
Well, again, what you started off with, you prefaced that with, I didn't get the money, right? I said, give me the money and I'll do it. But there's we got to get some understanding, and we've had discussions about this, on the use of identified program receipts. DMV is a good example. Their budget's about $13 million. They generate about $25 million. Yet their staffing over the last 12 years has stayed stagnant with all this increased workload on them with new drivers and things. And we're working with trying to get an understanding of what program receipts are, because there's a lot of nervousness over dedicated funds. And I just think that, you know, if the program generates revenue and receipts, we do the same thing in training at the academy. We charge back to other departments to do these kinds of things, and we just want recognition for that. If it doesn't cost anything, it's a vital service, they allow us to run that through the budget.
I don't think that last year you did, the department did receive and had authorization to receive these funds.
I understand that.
So it did not cost. This year, the administration, which you're a part of, refused to reinstate that authorization to receive those funds. Why?
I don't know why. We have, as I just tried to explain, Mr. Chairman, everything that we had in our budget said PR beside it, program receipts. That's not the only one. There's several of them that went through, did that. And we're having an education where we're explaining to them just exactly what that means. It's a wash. It's program receipts. I don't know what the date on that is, and I can certainly get Ken Bishop to get back, but I think that that's been straightened out, at least I could think. I mean, that's just somebody else is paying for it, we'll do it. To a limit, I guess I better limit that. You know, I like to leave.
Are you aware of the same type of situation about the receiving program receipts from building permits? Mm-hmm. Are you aware of that issue? Has that issue been taken care of?
All of them are being addressed, same situation, and being able to be allowed to show the program receipts and what they're for and how they're used. It's not coming out of the general fund, but they want to keep it in the general fund.
So I guess you're saying that the reason you oppose it is unless they give you the program receipts. If they give you the program receipts, you don't mind doing it.
Rather than take the whole thing out of the budget because they won't let you use program receipts, that's where we're having the problem, is that we're cutting that out of that cutting the program out of the budget when it's obviously being paid by someone else through the receipts from the program. I mean, that's where we've had discussions with them. Leave the program in and let us do the program if we're getting receipts to pay for it.
Well, that seems to be the problem, that the administration refused.
I think that's being corrected.
Let me throw out to you some accusations that have been made anonymously. And I normally wouldn't do this, but the reason I am is that it has come from another legislator who believes that the accusations may have some credibility. And because it came from this other legislator, I'm going to question him, even though I don't know where.
I object to that, Mr. Chairman.
What's your objection?
Well, I think anonymous allegations.
Like I said, it's coming from another legislator, and that's why I'm asking the question. And if there's no validity to it, certainly the commissioner can just say such. If you ask me to ask a question, Representative Baker, I'd certainly do it wherever you go.
I just object to anonymous allegations. If that's not appropriate.
The question is this, that Commissioner Burton purchased items that were used as gifts to legislators, perhaps only to a senator, at state expense. The items consist of hats and badges at cost of $800. Is there any validity to anything?
Yeah, I can
like
show you my cash and my checks. There's a whole anniversary committee, the 50th anniversary of state troopers, and we're selling hats, badges, T-shirts, and pins. And I purchased some of those, and some of them were gifts. In fact, the Golden Anniversary Committee, which is a nonprofit organization that's incorporated to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the troopers, is raising this money to write the history. We restored an old Hudson Hornet. I've got some up my office. If any of you want to buy them, I'll sell them $10 for hats. I've got a replica of a set of badges that are $50 a piece. Some of these things, to old friends of mine, like Dick Eliason, Jake Petula, and Fred Zaroff asked me for one, and I paid for them out of my own pocket. I've got the envelope with the money in the box with all my, we've got coffee cups, T-shirts with the territorial state police. Yeah, I didn't spend $800. I've spent maybe $150, $200 out of my own pocket, and I've got the envelope with the money in it in my office, and I'd be happy to. And I love anonymous complaints. People want to know what I do, ask me. And I think it is pretty, and I won't use the word, and tell whoever that legislator is and have, come talk to me. If they got a problem with me, talk to me. And there's not a bit of that that's true. We don't, we contributed about, and it probably cost $500 or $600 out of our association funds. We've got a painting commemorating our painting that we had to commemorate the 50th anniversary. We presented that to the speaker and the president. Pat Wellington's retired, director of the troopers, Tom Anderson retired. And the group, the Golden Anniversary Committee, out of the funds that we've raised ourselves, paid to have that framed, mounted, presented to the legislature, appreciation from the service, including even appreciated anonymous complaints like this, and one to the governor. It's hanging in the governor's office. Yeah, and I've got a lot of those. I can get more hats and stuff, too, if you want to take orders. I'll take orders. But we're raising money to get this history written and all the other things. That makes me a little angry, and I think it's a very low blow. And I wish you would have brought it up here, but I'm glad you did.
Kind of cluttered.
Tell that person to come.
Let me give you another one, Commissioner. Suggested that you issued contracts to friends using a letter form instead of a state contract form. Their one-time payments of $5,000. There's no competitive bidding. And the contracts are in question. When told he shouldn't be doing this, he said would be more, there would be more forthcoming.
Nobody's told me I shouldn't do it, and two contracts. One I let to retired Major Mike Carone, who used to be the Academy Commander. Because these questionnaires I told you I sent out, I've got a real common thread, and we got a training problem out there. The last two academies were trained without receiving adequate training in use of non-deadly force. When that L.A. thing came up, in fact, about that time, I hired Mike. We didn't have money. I don't have money in there to go out to bidding and all. He did about $25,000 worth of work for me. He currently runs a training academy that he set up over in Micronesia. He's probably one of the most recognized training people there are in the state today. He ran the training academy for the state for many years. He's retired major, been retired for a couple of years, and he does training. Gets called. He's a consultant all over the Pacific, Hawaii, and places like this. I asked him to go evaluate what is it we used to do, what are we doing now, and what should we be doing. And he came back with, and I'll send you a copy of the report. Probably ate several thousands of dollars of his own time in doing this, but $5,000 was what I paid because that's all I could pay.
Were you told that? It was probably illegal because it did not include his per diem and travel, which would put the contract over $5,000.
No, I was not told that. I gave Ken Bischoff, who was my director of administrative services, who spent 6 years in legislative affairs, budget and audit, and I'd give it to him. If there's anything wrong with it, don't do it. In fact, while you're there, you may have it on your list. State business cards, all right? There's a certain standard that they set and they get in this recycled paper and it's all black and white and ugly. So I got mine done a little different. Okay, I'll give them all to you. Because I kind of like a little proud of our logo that we have on there. So what I told them to do was get these cards printed up, tell me how much the state will allow, and give me the difference. And I wrote a check for $135 for 500 of these as my share of the difference. And, you know, I guess I must be psychic because I made a Xerox copy of it, and I sent a copy of that Xerox copy of my personal check to the governor and the lieutenant governor's office a couple of weeks ago.
Well, Commissioner, I hope you won't take offense to these questions.
I do.
Let me tell you why. Because when things come to me, I believe the best way to deal with them is up front in a public forum.
How long have you had this?
Just a couple days.
I've been in town the last couple of days, and you called me at home, but then that's all right.
Well,
I understand.
I think it's a perfect place myself to answer those questions, to put it on the public record, rather than having rumors and innuendo going out there. And you answer them publicly. That's part of being a good public official.
There's one thing I'm going to die with, and that's my reputation.
But I wish you wouldn't take such offense to the question.
Well, I guess maybe
have you seen this before, Commissioner?
No, I have not seen it.
Because this was on there.
I'm just a little bit human.
So you must be psyche here, too.
I've been a policeman for almost 40 years.
He's back.
I can tell a setup when it comes out.
Are you insinuating that I'm setting you up?
Not you, no, but somebody is. And then for what? What would I gain out of finding out how much training is needed in the department? What would I possibly gain from that? I don't understand. I mean, what was it? I've been, if they wanted to say I was getting money myself, but I'd be happy, you know, these hats and stuff. Whoever it is, tell them come over. I'll show them. I still got the envelope. I haven't turned the money in the anniversary committee yet. I still got it there. And a couple of them, I wrote checks for them. I'm glad I did instead of just putting cash. When Senator Zaroff wanted a hat the other day, I turned around and put $10 of my own in there. I bring him a hat because he's got the biggest hat collection, you know. He said, well, how come you give this guy a hat? It's a little advertising for us because we're not getting a whole lot of recognition. This is our 50th anniversary. We'd like to get about as much recognition as the fact that it's 50th anniversary of the highway next year. It's gotten a lot of recognition. In fact, several hundred thousands of dollars appropriated from the legislature to celebrate. We're doing it ourselves.
Commissioner, I think we all of us in public service have things thrown at us that have no validity.
First time in my life I've had this kind of stuff.
Well, let me tell you, when I ran for the last election, I was accused of being against education for drugs and took bribes. And I didn't appreciate it either. But you have to deal with those issues up front and to the public, and I think that's the best way to deal with them rather than allow rumors.
If they would deal with it up front, would be appreciated too.
Rumors to go on. Let me
I ask one question.
On this second?
Yes. To get from the serious to the mundane for a minute, on your card, what's this little deal in the lower right hand?
Recycling symbol.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
On that subject?
On the card? No.
On what we just talked about?
Yes.
I've got one hat order anyway out of here, so it wasn't a total waste.
Is this for you?
Mr. Chairman, I've been a product of grants 5,000 or under, and they don't fall under the procurement code. And I have also been a product of $5,000 grants where it took 10 or 12,000 to complete the project, and I went to other sources for the money to take care of per diem, travel, and things like that. And it was well within the guidelines of the department. Just to share that information with you.
Thank you. Representative Bruckman, you had your hand up too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to get back to the troopers on the hillside. Commissioner, you indicated that if they were hired, and I want to tell you that the hillsiders have a lot of respect for the troopers and the service they've been giving that area of Anchorage, and I suspect highly that they would like to continue that service. And when it comes down to the October vote, that it would go, if it were unveiling, that they would want to hire the troopers. Would you be willing at the prices you put in to do that? And you had indicated that you may hire new troopers for that service because you want to keep the current ones and have them do other duties like Glenn Highway.
That is, if we get out of the hillside, I'll put those people to work loose.
Okay.
Other areas.
But if you stay in the hillside, then you'll be the same troopers.
If the city doesn't vote to take over the policing of that service area, we will still have to provide some level of service. It may or may not be the same level it is now.
Right. What I'm telling you is there's a very real possibility that they will vote to pay for the service, but they will vote to pay the troopers, not the Anchorage Police Department.
Well, all that's at the time if that happens, of course, there's some legal issues about who we contract with and the negotiations would have to be worked out as to what level of service and everything would provide, sure. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd look at anything. I don't think I can give you the answer that you want here right now.
Okay.
A minute ago, were talking about putting more troopers out on the Glen Highway between yourselves, the troopers, that is, and the municipal police, the Anchorage Police Department. Has everybody pretty much agreed that if you had the manpower, that you would handle those as opposed to the municipal police?
Well, I don't know if we agreed. I haven't already talked to them about it. I just know that there was a deal cut of some kind a couple of years ago to turn that over to the city police department between Anchorage and Clutha. And I just don't know. I mean, even if the city police want to work it, we both have jurisdiction on it. There's certainly enough traffic. It's one of the heaviest traffic rules. I don't understand how you just say one or the other. We both should have it. You know, if they're on there working, they should work traffic as they see it too. Primarily, it's a state, you know, one of the few state four-lane, the closest things we have to an interstate. And how the state can make an agreement not to police it, I don't know. But we do. We don't patrol the Glen Highway from Anchorage to Clutha, as a matter of course.
Oh, you don't?
City police got 10 new positions added to the department to do that, and we stayed on Hillside. And so it's kind of reverse roles to me.
How about going down to Glenwood?
We do, but not very often.
Because I've seen, I thought I've seen Anchorage police.
Well, it's in the city.
They live there.
Yes, and they live in Glenwood. Some of them drive back before.
Take home cars, right?
Because I have been concerned, I tend to think that there should be some kind of an arrangement worked out. It makes no difference to me who does it, as long as it's coordinated and everybody knows who's doing it. And I would encourage you to do that. I think that that's very appropriate for the troopers to do, particularly the Glen Highway. You know, just so long as you guys have your act together.
I'd like to go back to your memo about morale. Could you tell us about that a little bit, or what you're doing, if anything? Not the memo, I'm sorry, the survey that you put out that indicated there was a morale problem.
No.
What are you doing with it, or anything? Or
I pull all of this, try it as near as you can to, if you can score anything, to score any of these responses, and identify the things that are common thread. And they're not talking about low pay or anything else. I mean, a lot of it came from the troopers on the road. That best way I'm going to be addressing it is going to be in our next plan, which is next year's budget. That they really feel the sense, the frustration that when you go to the academy, you get out of the academy, and there's not any follow-up training. We've got to have some of that. This is one of the reasons I hired Terhoni, because I relied on his judgment. And he identified some real medial training problems we have. Frustration, the fact that it's coming through from them that there are just so many cases that they don't feel that they're able to spend enough time on them to satisfactorily resolve them. It's hurry up, get them called, you know, you go to a certain point. It's the overload frustration and the facilities and equipment. Some of them out in the field in Fairbanks went out and bought their own portable radios out of their own pockets so they'd have decent communication, because a lot of the equipment's 15 years old, it's outdated, it's not working, it's not dependable, it breaks down. Driving patrol cars with over 100,000 miles on them. Any kind of thing in an organization like this, if you put yourself in it, it'll be damned hard on your morale. That when you see other agencies have new buildings built and new equipment and better radio equipment and better everything else, where the primary agency that should have that kind of equipment is being neglected, that's a morale problem. And so I intend to help do something about that in just such manner as the way I'm telling you right now, and bring that to the governor's attention. I think we need the planning that needs to go in up front of where are we going and what are we going to do with this. I recommended to the governor's office the other day, we're going to do, as soon as the legislature's over, so we have some time to do some things, is to form internally working groups. And my recommendation for us is a criminal justice working group. Police, public safety, corrections, department of law, court system, and the director from OMB to get together and say, you know, let's approach this in a cohesive manner, because say I got 50 more troopers, then how many more DAs are going to be? How much is it going to have the impact on the court system, impact on the corrections? It's got to be a full circle thing. And it's been where what we're all doing is sitting, everybody's after the same buck and competing for it, and it may not be necessarily being spent in the best place throughout the system. And so the governor's going to take that approach to it. And that's one reason I'm here, is because of that governor and his commitment to bringing some organization to this. Otherwise, I wouldn't have come back because I didn't ask for a job. And things like you just brought up are things that have happened in my past that makes me wonder. Like this morning, I told my wife, I'd sure much rather stay home and finish my workbench in the garage today because I've been through this before. So that's my morale problem. But my other problem is take care of the morale of the department. And I just give them some recognition and get some help back out there. Get them the equipment, the tools to do their job with.
Do you, this probably could be said in a lot of the departments, I think, probably feel the same way, that some things go up, but the basic things to run their department are not always there.
That could be, but I'm going to worry about public safety.
Your own. The came out in the paper this weekend that Lieutenant Governor Coghill has got a bunch of charts up on the walls in the governor's conference room or someplace, and I believe the number was 700 some middle-level people he thinks he could get rid of. How do you see, I mean, it appears that this governor is in the mode of cutting, and how are you going to justify that? Because everything you've come out with this has indicated that your main service needs to be increased.
Well, I think the governor recognizes that. He's not looking across the board in his approach to what you're doing now. It's a matter of prioritizing.
So you think that he'll be recommending increased personnel in your in the department?
Well, if he believes what I say, he does, and it doesn't matter priority of what things need to go, yes, I think we have to have.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would, I know Mike Cahonen. Mike and I wrote the Village Police Training Manual about 15, 20 years ago, and he's a very good person. I would share that with the committee.
We've been joined by Representative Lincoln.
How has it been working with your two directives that you put out about people talking to the legislature, your employees? Has that worked out pretty well? Do you feel like you've been kept up to, I think that was your real point about these two memos, is so that you know everything that's going on here dealing with the legislature director. Is that working out well?
Okay, really well. Really well.
No, I don't have any further questions. I'm satisfied.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Commissioner's got a real solid reputation in public safety in Alaska. And there's some real hairy stories, which I won't share at this time, but 20, 25 years ago when he was the only trooper in Dillingham, he's come through the system, all the way through the system, left. My wife and I ran into him, or ran into his reputation in Saipan and Guam, a few years back when he left the state, was over helping set up the justice system with Herb Soule at the time. That was correct. And there with Herb Soule. And I for one, am pleased to see that he took the job. I hope, Commissioner, that you'll... I remember in my campaign, I said cuts across the board, and what a terrible mistake I made, because... it can't be done that way, and I realized it can't be done that way. As I look at public safety's budget, I've made my concerns known. I'd like to see a bit of an expansion. Years ago, we had a Bush Police organization that was probably one of the best in the world when we first started out. And I think it's deteriorated. We just don't have the personnel anymore. But I appreciate your candidness in answering the questions. Thank you.
Representative Lincoln, is there anything you'd like to add to our discussion with Commissioner Swain?
I appreciate that. I don't know if some of the things have already been covered. I had several questions. One is, I was curious as to, with your department, one of the memos that came out, and I don't remember which commissioner now, was credited with saying that the philosophy of the administration must be the same, and then it went on further to correct that statement. Instead of it being the philosophy of administration, they said they meant that it should be the philosophy as within the department, that DNR shouldn't have somebody who, for example, is opposed to AMWAR. And I was wondering, within your department, are you expecting your employees to have the same philosophy as you, or they cannot express any different philosophy than what you purport to have?
Well, I guess you're referring to the famous memo of Commissioner Teller. I would like to see people in my department that have the same philosophy as I do, in extent that I don't want anybody in there that believes in breaking the law. I don't want anybody in there that believes violating the trust that the people put in them. That's what I believe. I don't want anybody in there unless they believe that they're there for the purpose to uphold the law as equal as we can to everybody in the state. And that philosophy I would like to have people believe in that came to work for the public safety.
But you're not specifically to a project or a certain philosophy that you might have, but you're looking at more of a general philosophy.
Sure. Well, that's what I think that memo was intended to say and didn't say. You could define philosophy, and there's probably thousands of them. I think from what you're saying, the intent, and what people immediately jumped on the meaning of that memo, was not what was meant to be said, because I know the guy, and he's as sincere and dedicated as can be. In the conversations that I've had with him, and I knew it was bad wording, and he admitted that. With people in here that are dedicated to doing service and putting in a full 7.5 hours a day and giving the best that they can to the state, and that's what's meant by it. And I don't think I want anybody working that's not committed to that. And commitment to doing public service, as you know from your job, it takes a commitment.
If I might, Mr. Chairman.
Continue, Representative.
In that, I read a letter from one of an anonymous letter. Well, sometimes they're necessary, so I'm not offended by anonymous letters.
I'm glad someone else is bringing up an anonymous so that I don't have to take the heat for the whole thing here.
The letter that I received was from an employee, a state employee, who felt that they would like to express perhaps a different philosophy within a department, and was fearful for their job because of this chart that has all these little red dots somewhere that, that they might be forced out of the position, that they're dispensable. Well, I'd like to see the state employees have the ability to express to you or to anyone within your department a different philosophy, certainly not to the media, but to be able to express that without having the fear of losing their position.
My people do that to me every day.
Well, I'm glad to hear
you don't know the Department of Public Safety.
The second question that I've got, Commissioner, is that I'm coming from a bush area, District 24 of the state, that we have the VPSO.